둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to also give a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired. Those always help out so much. We've had some great guests on lately. Carly Pierce was just here to talk about her record Hummingbird. Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers. Brandi Carlile, Ani DeFranco, Maya Hawke. Not only is she starring in Wildcat, but she's also shooting Stranger Things and just released her album, Chaos Angel. We talked with Caleb Followill of Kings of Leon, Tadanobu Asano from Shogun, Carl Clemens Hopkins from the HBO show Hacks, Joe Talbot from Idols, the cast of The Big Cigar on Apple TV+, Tom Bailey of the Thompson Twins, Joe Gatto, Sebastian Bach, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a twofer, special episode. Director Richard Linklater and actress Adria Arjona. We're going to be talking about the Netflix film The Hitman, starring Adria and Glenn Powell, which is inspired by an unbelievable true story about a straight-laced professor who discovers his hidden talent as a fake hitman before meeting his match and a client who steals his heart and ignites a powder keg of deception, delight, and mixed-up identities. Now, Richard Linklater, the writer-director behind some of the greatest movies of all time, Dazed and Confused, Before Sunrise, Boyhood, just to name a few, is going to tell us why he's been wanting to find a way to tell this story for 20 years and how matching up with Glenn Powell finally put the pieces in place. Richard also found a way to drop in a few of his trademark existential conversations into the script, and we're going to discuss how our sense of identity and who we imagine ourselves drives the story. We'll also hear a bit about his thoughts on the movie's New Orleans-based soundtrack and the different ways he approaches storytelling, especially in the upcoming adaptation of Merrily We Roll Along, which he's currently shooting. And of course, we'll be talking to Adria here in just a few moments, but let's get this started discussing The Hitman. It's Kyle Meredith with Richard Linklater.
Hey, how you doing?
What a fun story. I know it's, I love that it's, you know, a somewhat true story. It's, of course, really interesting that you find this story from an article written by the same journalist who you got Bernie from, right?
Yes, yeah, Skip Hollandsworth. He has a real nose for a true crime, crazy character story, yeah.
Yeah, what a great, you know, well of source, I guess,
yeah,
coming from that. I know this is the obvious place to start, but why this one? Why did this story stick with you for so long, do you think?
Yeah, good question. That's a good litmus test on what could make a film. If you're still thinking about it years later, there must be something in the character or the story that intrigues you so much, you can only find your answer by making a film about it, you know? And that was the case here. It was like, what a complex guy, you know? He lived alone, he taught at school, but he moonlights as a fake hitman because living in the myth of hitmen, they don't really exist. And these desperate people. I just thought it was really darkly funny, too. Just really funny in the strangest of ways. But the story didn't really go anywhere. It was the same thing over and over. It was only after, during the pandemic, and we're talking 19 years later, Glenn Powell calls me up and says, hey, I read this article from Texas Monthly about a fake hitman. I'm like, Glenn, I read that when it came out. I've revisited that over the years. I've thought a lot about that as a movie, but I don't know if it works. It's, you know, it's just this. And he's like, well, let's talk about that. And man, that conversation went on for the next year and a half, and we had a movie at the end of it, you know? So at some point I said, Glenn, we should just work on this together. You know, just, I could write a first draft and then we would rewrite it in production, you know, workshop, rehearsal. Let's just start now, you know? He was such a great contributor, and we really push each other and make each other laugh too. So we were really fun partners on this. And once we opened the floodgate to kind of taking a leap out of the Skip's story, ends about a third of the way through our movie. What happens next is this kind of thrill ride leap we did that sort of brings in the genre play, you might say, in the movie.
Seeing you and Glenn working together, of course, I go back to Everybody Wants Some, one of the great movies of the last decade, one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
And Glenn in those jean shorts that we see him in the beginning. And which, again, I feel like those shorts we also saw in Everybody Wants Some. So maybe there's something going on there.
Yeah.
But with him playing all of these different roles, is there anything that goes into that kind of conversation? Because, you know, this nerd version that we see at first, that redhead that is just so out there of amongst all of them. I mean, how do you all talk about what he does in coming up with all of these different people?
Yeah, I mean, the real Gary Johnson would alter his appearance and kind of, if you think about it, it's a world of artifice. It's fake in a world of fake. You know, there aren't hitmen. So he's trying to be their, what they will buy as who they think. So he's kind of reverse engineering the hitman to the client. And we kind of ran with that idea and went way over the top with it, you know, because Glenn went off the real deep end there. But it was such an opportunity, you know, to show, I don't know, the creativity that he would have in the range of people and all the, this exists in a kind of a pop culture mythological place. So you couldn't be too over the top because it wasn't possible. So we could have really a lot of fun with that. But I saw we had mock-ups, you know, like Glenn's face with different, you know, makeup and hair, and I know we were working on accents, and, you know, we rehearsed the scenes with the people, but then, you know, the final version of that person, Hitman, really didn't show up till that day. When Glenn got out of the van, I finally, you know, after the 3 hours of makeup we hadn't done yet, I was like, holy crap. The whole crew would just stop and laugh or go, oh my God, what freak has just walked on our set? You know, it was every day. Every time he showed up in a new character, it was freak of the week, you know, freak of the day kind of situation. So I'll never forget him making appearances as those guys. Yeah. But it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, Glenn, like I said, he kind of went off the deep end, but he was reading books on body language, posture. You're really getting the difference. I mean, the real body switch here is Gary into Ron. But all those other guys in between, you know, they're important too. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about because, you know, looking at that specific plot point of becoming the person that we want to be. Like, I was thinking about this this Chris Cornell lyric from the song Sun Shower, where he says, all you'll be, you are today. And that's what I, you know, when I look at Gary and I look at Ron, like, was Ron always in the Gary? Do you think he was always there?
I think so, yeah. Like his ex-wife says, you know, you're tweaking up one and tweaking down the other, turning up knobs. I think we all do contain that. I think it satisfies some little wish fulfillment in all of us. Who doesn't fantasize about being someone else, you know? It goes a little over the top with superheroes or having special powers. You know, he was just talking. To me, it's the introvert to an extrovert, you know? It's a passionless to passion. You know, it's these little things that we do maybe all possess But it's quite a transformation, and you know, that's what the story is. Can you change? You know, you see a willful change. The Gary at the end of the movie would not recognize the Gary from the beginning would not recognize that guy. He's doing things he didn't think himself capable of, good and bad, you know?
And we'll be right back right after this.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Richard Linklater.
You know, in a lot of your movies, and one of the reasons why I love them, is because you'll if you, you know, wide scope, you can see these big topics, but you also fit in. You always seem to fit in these great, thoughtful conversations in it. In this one, we get it with the id and the ego, moon and water, life and existence, and how that's going in there. You know, and of course, you know, as a viewer, I can trace those conversations back to Suburbia, and of course, the before movies. Like, in those moments, for you, is that a glimpse into what you're thinking about at the time? Is it just, I mean, what drives you to put those moments in a movie like this, and it still works?
Oh, certainly. I guess I always kind of default to, you know, thoughtful characters who can, you know, try to articulate their thoughts and communicate what they're feeling, and, you know, that's just... it's a very human thing that often doesn't find its way into cinema because you're not necessarily advancing a plot or character points if you're just thinking theoretically. But I've always felt that it was pretty cinematic. It reveals a lot about the self. Of course, we stack the deck in our favor by having him being a college lecturer. You know, he can get up there and say things because he's teaching psychology too. So he can say things that end up being very on point to our themes. It's kind of a, you know, it's a shortcut, a cheap trick, you might say, but a good one, you know, a good trope there. But that was Gary. He was a very thoughtful guy, real Buddhist, real Jungian scholar, you know, thoughtful guy. Also, you know, Vietnam vet. He was in the military police. He was, you know, undercover guy. He's putting guys in prison. You know, he was a tough cookie also.
Yeah, what a life. What a life on that. Yeah. It is nice to hear those moments, though, because I usually end up taking those and, you know, those make conversations outside of the movie.
But they are what I'm thinking. Like, my own thinking has changed on a lot of these things over 20 years. And this one, I was kind of more in the camp of, yeah, we really can't change. We're just sort of stuck with ourselves. You know, we're in this kind of fixed thing. And Before Sunset, they were even talking about that. That very subject, I realized, was 20 years earlier in another movie. And he was kind of talking about the fixedness of a personality, where now I've read enough since then and thought and been intrigued by the idea of willful change. No, you really can change your personality. I was like, well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Let's throw that out there in the world. Who knows, you know? But I thought this is showing someone willfully changing.
Which, by the way, I was just in a room with Ethan, but two nights ago with the Wildcat premiere.
Oh, wow.
And hearing him talk, like hearing the way that you all seem to have rubbed off on each other with those kind of things. Like, I even see those moments in his movie now. So it's...
Yeah, well, there's a reason Ethan and I, we were kind of... That conversation started 30 years ago and hasn't stopped.
The sound of this movie, of course, you move the original story from Houston to New Orleans. So I guess that opens up because we hear Dr. John... see the Alan Toussaint Boulevards. I mean, maybe you didn't get to do as much as you want to do because I know music costs a lot of money, but what did you want the sound of this movie? Because I feel like that's very easy if you want to just lean into New Orleans.
Yeah, we did. Louisiana music, New Orleans in particular, became the backdrop. Yeah, there was that thing, like the original story was set in Houston, but this, every big city has this kind of undercover element to it. It has to, you know, in their police work. And New Orleans seems like even a better city, you know? I mean, we were there for various reasons, but it worked perfectly. It does seem, you know, a lot of crazy characters, a lot of make-believe in New Orleans, a lot of danger. There's kind of an undercurrent of lawlessness. You maybe could more likely get away with murder there, you know? So it worked perfectly for us. But I wasn't, you know, if you're going to jump into a location, jump in. So, yeah, the music became the backdrop of all that. Yeah, why not use it? It's what a great music tradition, what a great music town. And I got to know more. You know, I thought I knew, you know, a good bit, but I dove in much more deeply and had a great time doing it, you know.
Well, you set the bar high on yourself right from the beginning with your soundtracks. I mean, the money you spent on Dazed, Legendary Story right there. Like, that's what I wonder is, like, you know, how important is that going into every movie? Is that just, you know, for you, the soundtrack side of things?
It really depends on the movie. You know, some movies I know that the music itself will be a very expressive element, and it's important, especially something like Dazed. I was like, yeah, the music kind of drives your life at that age. But I've done other movies that are much more quiet and adult, like the music is, yeah, it's not so much the narrative driver. So, I don't know, it just depends. Period pieces, the music seems to be very important. You know, I always kind of start with the music in a lot of movies, but this one I knew because of the New Orleans, I would kind of feel my way through, you know. I knew we'd need some score just because of the tone of the movie. Graham Reynolds did a great job in addition to the, you know, New Orleans music. So, I don't know. It was moody and a lot of mood shifts and plot twists. And yeah, this is pretty intricate. You add it all up and it's a really wonderful soundtrack.
Well, I want to thank you for all the musical moments that you've made throughout the movies.
Oh, thank you.
Throughout the year. They certainly meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
I'll also say just the way you tell stories, it's the reason why I, you know, try to watch everything that you put out, you know, from Boyhood and before, and the way you've done those. And what is it I'm reading about Merrily We Go, which is sort of maybe a reverse timeline thing. Like, do you find that you're still, it's like Jack White trying to put out a vinyl. He doesn't just want to put it out on a black vinyl. It's got to be different every time. Like, do you find that you're still exploring?
Well, I think the artist has to, you know, you got to find the right form for what's in your head, for what story you're telling and all that. So, yeah, a lot of it is, it's a formal challenge. So I respect the musician who's like, oh, no, I want people to listen to it on vinyl or some old. Yeah, you know, you have that right to try to do that. But, you know, I spend most of my time, you know, I have a lot of stories and characters I'm obsessed with. But it's like how to tell them, you know, what's the form, what's the tone, you know, all that. The long-term project, Merrily We Roll Along, that's in a pre-existing, you know, it's a Sondheim musical, but it just necessitates a long effort. You know, the characters are aging backwards over 20 years, so it's kind of hard to fake that. So here we go, you know, we'll be a third of the way through by the end of the year, so.
That's just incredible. I mean, it's just incredible that, you know, movies get made in a month because you have to, and you've figured out a way just to do these epic things without it feeling, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're tempting fate, obviously. You're trusting in some future that's not fully assured, and you, yeah, but what the hell? You know, what are you going to do? You kind of put yourself out there every project anyway. This is just, you know, a little more vulnerable, but, you know, you charge forward into the future with a little bit of a lack of caution, a little bit of belief, you know.
Now, I certainly do enjoy the movies you put out there. The Hitman is such a fun movie. It is such a fun movie. Congrats again on it. And sir, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. Well, really nice talking with you.
My thanks to Rick there, The Hitman, now on Netflix. And as I mentioned, it also stars Adria Arjona, who you know from plenty of things. The Father of the Bride. She plays Bix Killeen in Andor. She's going to be in the upcoming Blink Twice. She was in Morbius. She also plays the love interest and potential client here in The Hitman, opposite Glenn Powell. We're going to get her take on Madison's motives, her chemistry with Glenn, and like Linkletter, thoughts on our ability to clean slate our personality for a new one. Audrey is also going to talk about creating a mood board for the role, which she apparently does often, using paintings, photographs, songs as inspiration. Always wanted to star in a Linklater movie, and we'll hear about those upcoming roles in Blink Twice and the next season of Andor as well. But let's jump into it. Talking the Hitman, it's Kyle Meredith with Adria Arjona.
Hi.
Congrats on the Hitman. A wonderfully funny movie.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, it is such a fun movie. Of course, when you come onto the screen, you are this mystery amongst many other people, although we know from the previews that you are the interest. But you're this mystery that we very quickly are asking, is she crazy? Like, how did you want to play? Is it Maddie? Was that the character's name? Maddie?
Madison.
Madison, right. How did you want to play her? Because for a long time, I think that's my central question is like, Is she crazy or is she just in love?
Or she's crazy in love, like Beyonce says. I don't think she, I don't really think she's crazy. You know, I think what fascinated me about Madison is her fascination with reinventing herself. And I think we do that all the time. You know, you talk different when you're on the phone with your mom than you're with your best buddy, you know, or when you're on a first date. I think that was kind of where we jump started, was like, first dates are the biggest lies in the world. So no, I don't think she's crazy. I think she's in constant reinvention of herself, and she's, you know, she's creating her idea of what a femme fatale is and who a femme fatale is for her and for Ron. And I think that's why we see her shift so many times in the movie, is because she's constantly, what is he like? What is he like? And we kind of do that, not to the extreme that she does it, of course. But I think coming from a sort of oppressed relationship, I just really wanted her to blossom after that diner scene and feel free and unexpected. And it was really, you know, we worked really hard at creating that dynamic between the three of us.
But, and you did it so well, because even throughout it, and you're right, you get to a point where suddenly I've bought in to these people, regardless of what they're doing. But for a long time, it's who can be trusted, you know, and watching both you and Gary/Ron playing with these characters and playing with these new identities, you know, I come back to the question, you know, of course we all want to become something, and maybe we will ourselves to do that. Were we always that person? Was that always inside us? Or are you able just to clean slate it? Like, what's your opinion, I guess, is what I'm asking on that.
No, I think it kind of stays with you a little bit, or those lessons sort of stay with you. I don't really... Yeah, I think you can't quite press erase and delete. I think it still sort of lingers with you until hopefully one day it doesn't. But I think it'll be with you forever.
Well, I will say, as far as some of those lines, when you do say, "Do I scare you?" That's everything to me. That one moment, that's like, I held on to that. Your chemistry with Glenn is also so good in this. Is that just total professionalism? Is that something you work on the front end? Like, how do you all arrive to being that good in that moment?
Rick has a really good explanation. He goes, you can't create chemistry. Either you have it or you don't. And I think he's right. Rick is usually right. I think Glenn and I, from the second we met, you know, we share so much in common that it was like instant. We're like, oh, I can spend 3 months with you filming a movie. We could become friends. Like, it just felt really comfortable really quickly. When I first read the script, there wasn't that many steamy, sexy, that sexy element wasn't that prominent in the script. And I think during rehearsals and when creating this dynamic, I was very much, you know, in the writer's room sort of giving my input on Madison. And when creating this dynamic, it just felt necessary. So Glenn and I would come up with all these different references. I came in with like a mood board of things that I found really beautiful and sensual. There was all these pictures from famous photographers and all these pieces of artwork and sculptures that I was like, ooh, this silhouette is really beautiful. Or there was one with like a stocking, and that's kind of the scene of the sock where he's pulling my sock. And there was another one where there was a gentleman behind this woman, and it was this beautiful photograph in Italy, and he like had spilled some wine, and we're like, ooh, that could be really interesting to sort of bring that image to life. So I think it allowed us to have a lot of fun and have all these conversations because we had all these references that we were bringing into a 3D format. And we were, you know, in the writer's room, we were writing all these scenes, and we sort of forgot for seconds that we're like, oh, we're the ones that had to perform this. So when the day came, we both looked at each other like, wow, we really did this to ourselves. You know, right. Usually there's writers or directors that are like, oh, you have to do this sex scene. And the actress is the one going, oh, I don't know if I want to, or is it necessary? In this case, it was the two actors really going like, ooh, we really want to share their passion, because that passion and their love is pivotal to the plot. It makes you really believe in them and want to sort of go on this ride with them. And it was so fun. It was so fun to write them and come up with them. It was so cool.
I love the idea of that mood board. You'd mentioned Beyonce a minute ago, and that was my first thought, because it's like every album that she does, every specific moment is sort of in reference to a piece of art or something. Like, have you worked like that before? Do you like to work with sort of that?
Yeah, I do actually. I really enjoy it. I always, when I'm prepping for a role, I'll go to a museum and I'll pick one painting or sculpture or whatever it might be. And that energy that is there, I'm like, ooh, that's, you know, it's reminiscing of something. And I don't know, it just, whatever inspires me then kind of just takes me on a spiral, whether it's a song or a piece of art. It kind of just takes me in a completely different train of thought. And then I get little surprises of like who this character will be. I know it's a little weird, but either I go with the, you know, with art or with people. I steal so much from friends and family members, or even strangers in the street.
Only because you said song, and I hate to put you on the spot, but do you think Madison has a theme song?
Ooh, I do have a playlist for her. I always make a playlist for my characters, but a theme song? No, I think she's a 5-second kind of song. You know, she's like so sporadic. I don't know if Madison could be an entire song.
She's one of those, let me play this for you, and gives you a few seconds. Uh-huh. Like, no, go to the next one.
And now I don't want to give it to you anymore. And let me play it. And no, like she's a give and take for sure. Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. Kyle Meredith with Adria Arjona.
Chris, you mentioned Linklater. I would love to hear about, you know, your take of being directed by him. You know, he's got his own style. I mean, he's been doing this for, you know, 30 years. I love the way that he always sort of works in ways to ask bigger questions, even when we've got this fun semi-true story comedy going on. Like, there's a lot of bigger questions that's being talked about, some that we've already mentioned about identification, you know, and how you do. But what was your relationship and experience working with him?
Matt, he's ruined a lot for me, that man. Because it the way that he works is just so, it's so cool. And I just wish more people would work like that. You know, he comes from a place of no ego. He's one of my personal favorite directors. And I'm not just saying that because I'm in one of his movies. I genuinely, his movies have, I've always aspired to be an actress, like an actress in a Richard Linklater's movie. I've always been like, oh, I want to act like that. I want to have a performance like that. So when working with him, it was funny because I was like, oh, he must love improv, because everything feels so fresh and like these characters are saying things for the first time. And I told him, I was like, I just wanted to say the right thing on our first Zoom. And I was like, I love improv. I can. And he's like, I hate it. I was like, oh man, I really messed that one up. And I thought that, you know, I needed freedom and I needed things to be said for the first time when I was performing. So I would do a lot of work, but memorize my lines the night before I had to film them, so they would still be fresh. And he's changed that completely for me. With Rick, you rehearse, he makes you a part of the process. So you're sort of writing the script with him. They obviously wrote the script, structured the script, but he allows you to have such a big input in the creation of your character, that it's just not that common. And you rehearse it for 2 weeks, every single day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We would run these lines, these jokes over and over again. I was so scared that things wouldn't be funny. And he's like, no, because people are hearing it for the first time. And he really taught me that you find the freedom on set. And it's really liberating to rehearse so much, to prep so much, and to get to a set and have no doubts and have made choices with very clear intentions. All of a sudden, between action and cut, you feel so free. You're like, because you're so comfortable in the material that so much magic starts sort of happening. So yeah, he's definitely shifted the way that I work now. And I just feel so much more confident after working with him, because there's no doubt, you know what you're getting. You have very clear intentions of what sort of each scene is going to become.
No, I love that. It's like hearing before sunrise that everything was meticulously rehearsed, that none of that was improv, and it's just kind of
None of that
mind-blowing.
was, when he told me that, my mind was blown. It makes me respect those actors even more. It makes me respect Rick even more. I'm like, I need the world to know how precise Rick is when he directs.
It is incredible. And I'll just quickly say, seeing that you have so much happening right now, all at once, it feels like all at once. I mean, because the absence of Eden, you just did that one right. And did you get to act with Tom Waits? And I saw he was on there as well.
I didn't know. I didn't. I was on set. I think we crossed. I didn't see him. I would have freaked out. I'm a huge Tom Waits fan. But he, I think, got to set a day after or a day before I left, or something like that. So I just missed him.
Missed opportunity there. But of course, Andor and Blink Twice, I cannot wait to see that. When it's that kind of cast, because you go from sort of the smaller movie here with the Hitman to something like that, how does that change the experience for you as an actor?
It doesn't really. I mean, I think you still hone in on the process and your character. I think when you're doing an ensemble, you sort of need to know where your piece of the puzzle is. And once you know that, then you're kind of good to go. And ensemble pieces are so fun, and it's less pressure as well, because the plot, you're not driving this plot as precisely as in a movie like Hitman. You get to be supportive of each other, whether it is a scene that is pivotal to the movie or not. You kind of It's a really supporting and collaborative process. So I think both of them I really enjoyed. I've been in a lot of ensembles now that I think about it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward. That movie looks wild. Blink Twice, and of course, Andor. Everybody's excited to see
Wait for season
characters
two.
go. Yeah, I saw that quote where you said a 10 times more complex than what people imagine. That's
Yeah, I
a nice
think,
tease
I
right there.
mean, Tony is just, if you think you know what Tony is going to write, you're wrong. Like, it is so much more complex than what people can imagine. He took me by surprise, and I had all these predictions of where Bix was going to go or where the storyline was going to go, and I was so wrong.
Guess we'll all find out soon. Congrats on the Hitman. Again, it is such a fun movie. I so enjoy watching it. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about
Well,
it.
thank you. This was so fun.
My thanks to Adria and to Richard Linklater. The Hitman is out now on Netflix. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please, again, do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around so you can get all the interviews that we do every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 3 interviews a week to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover the new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Don't forget to also give the series a rating, leave a review, because those always help out so much. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Nirvana, Beck, Fish, Fleetwood Mac, Emerson, Hart, Halsey, Broken Bells, Angel Olsen, The Miracle of 86, REM, David Bowie, Southern Culture on the Skids, Tyler Childers, American Aquarium, The Killers, Q, Bibba Doobie, and my interview with Kevin Bacon. Again, just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith, and I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.